Hey folks, this is Anatoly and you're listening to the Solana podcast. And today I have Larry Cermak, who is the VP of research at The Block. Awesome to have you, man.
Yeah, nice to be on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so tell me your origin story. How did you get into crypto?
Yeah, it's probably slightly longer, but I mean, really high level. I got involved in late 2016. I was in college in the US and was thinking about what to do my thesis on, and Bitcoin like seemed like one of the more obvious options to not make it incredibly boring. So I just decided to go with that. And like throughout the research process, I just kind of found that there really isn't good research about Bitcoin, just in general crypto. There was either the super bullish people that were like all in on Bitcoin or super like bearish academics. And there was nothing in between. And I felt like, you know, I can kind of fill the gap a little bit. So after I published that research, you know, I shared it publicly as well with a few people. And based on that, I got my first job offer to work at DR, which was a research company. Focusing only on crypto. So I worked there for a couple of years and really just tried to focus on data-driven research, which was, you know, now it sounds kind of obvious, but back then it just wasn't very common. Most people, you know, were just looking at like the really simple metrics and on-chain data, but mostly it was just price discussion, price predictions, all that stuff. And we were really looking at, you know, just analyzing the market a little bit more fundamentally, even though that sounds even more silly now looking back. And you know, I got lucky that in 2017, when I joined full time, like early 2017, I joined full time. And, you know, that's when everything popped off massively. And it was just a bunch of like shit ICOs, like a lot of sketchy stuff. And I like, you know, cautiously like started looking more into these projects. And so I was one of the like people that were kind of cautioning against some of the ICO stuff. And it was just, it was a lot of fun, but I was quite skeptical back then still. So actually, a lot of people who like have followed me for a while, like they know initially I was a no-coiner. I had no crypto, and I was convinced that initially, actually, that, you know, a lot of this is just kind of hype mania. It's going to go, you know, it's just all like overblown massively. But something like really drawn me into it, and that was mostly like the permissionless nature, ability for anyone to participate. But what really I didn't like was just like the hype around it, the marketing, the emptiness, and all that stuff. And so I spent, you know, I over-focused on that, I think, initially. But after some time, you know, I realized that that's probably not, you know, what this is all about. And I think I started, you know, initially I didn't think that it was necessarily important to for like most projects to have tokens, and I was very skeptical that most tokens needed projects, and I started massively changing my mind on this, like, you know, with the DeFi kind of beginnings. So early 2020, my mind started completely changing on most of the space, and I started allocating a little bit more. And, you know, now I also do seed investing privately, and obviously, you know, lead the research department, The Block, which is now 25 researchers, probably the largest research team in crypto.
So you went from like Bitcoin skeptic to full shitcoiner?
Kind of, yeah. It's a little bit concerning, honestly.
In 4 years.
Yeah, I don't think I was really ever just like a massive Bitcoin skeptic. I was just skeptical of like everyone, like just, you know, everyone's so positive and Bitcoin maximalist, like, I just could not handle it. Like when you just start using like really bad arguments to, you know, just kind of shitpost and you know, being really negative about everything other than Bitcoin and then not being open-minded, that really pissed me off. And I wasn't open to it. I was like relatively active in the Ethereum community early on. And then with DeFi, you know, we had Teo on the team initially, who was like one of the people the most involved in DeFi early on. He's now the director of strategy at Uniswap. And he definitely kind of showed us all on the research team the way, you know, why this makes sense. And when I really like started kind of understanding that these tokens are not just useless, they can actually be used for like real things. And they do, you know, they do get closer to almost equity in some ways, even though obviously a lot of them try not to. But when you have some sort of a claim and some sort of cash flows, that's when it gets interesting to me. And governance, obviously, as well. But that's when I really, like, completely started flipping. But, you're kind of right. Like, I went from a skeptical no-coiner to then kind of a shit-coiner now, like, spraying seed investments that I like.
Do you still, like, believe in this idea of sound money?
Yeah, I actually, so a lot of, like, Ethereum community members think that, like, you know, Bitcoin is just a meme. you know, it's going to go away. I actually don't believe that myself. I do believe that there, what's really powerful about Bitcoin is that it's been around for the longest time, and it's very hard to compete against what it has, which is basically just the belief of a lot of people. And it's difficult to break that. And then you also have a lot of buy-in, you know, recently from not only hedge funds, but also larger institutional investors. And that counts for a lot more than just, you know, a functioning smart contract blockchain, even though it sounds silly. Something that's established as internet money and a lot of people pushing for it is really powerful. And so, yeah, I still kind of believe in that. And I don't think that Bitcoin is going to be, you know, surpassed by Ethereum anytime soon. I actually have a bet going with Kyle from Multicoin about that. But yeah, you know, generally, I believe there's some merit to it, but I definitely also believe that people should be more open-minded. And because a lot of people are closed-minded, that they're missing on a lot of like really obvious opportunities. Like really my bread and butter is kind of exploiting these things when people underestimate something and when there's actual merit to it that they don't see because of some reason or another, that's when I usually perform really well.
Yeah, I mean, that's digging for alpha, man. That's real work.
Yeah, but the Blocks research team, when I started, obviously it was just two people, and now we have 25 full-time researchers that a lot of them, you know, dig that up for me now, thankfully. It was a lot of hard work, like doing a lot of that myself, but now, you know, there's a massive team behind me, and it's going really well. Like, we're reaching a lot of like institutional customers as well, and the market just exploded massively this year for institutional access.
That's amazing. So 25 researchers at the Block, how many people total?
Like around 70 or something, 75 maybe. But, you know, the Block, like initially, even when we started, I joined one of the first employees, like 2018, and the vision was always kind of to kind of go through all the noise and bullshit and price predictions and, you know, SEO plays and all the clickbait nonsense and try to go through that and have more kind of data-driven, research-oriented coverage on the news side. We started with that and then eventually turned into actually, you know, a research product that's just mainly focused towards institutional customers. But obviously the news part is still a really important part of the business. It's what most people know. The institutional product is not really accessible for regular retail customers. And it's been a really, really fun ride just like going through this in the last 3 years. And, you know, I don't think people realize how really difficult it is to you know, go from nothing to building a media company that's recognized by people and like some would respect it. It's something that like took a lot of hard work and you know, it's a very thankless business. Like, media is just like, it doesn't usually make too much money. It's something that's really, you know, under monetized in a lot of ways. So that's why we're going more into research, more into data, and just going after the, you know, institutional customers because they have deeper pockets and they're more sophisticated, which is easier.
What are the fundamentals with something like Bitcoin, something like money? Like, why would it, like, it's just such a dumb idea for somebody that's like a value equity investor that's looking at the Amazon, right?
I mean, it's a really good question. Like, a lot of it is just a common belief that this is worth something. Like, I mean, if you ask the same question about a lot of other things, you're going to arrive at the same answer. It's basically like the value is because a lot of people believe in it. Like, so similar with gold, right? Like, who's using gold for stuff? Like, very little people for like jewelry and chips and all that. And like, most people don't care about that. Most people use it because they believe it will retain value and because they believe there is some sort of a scarce supply that's somehow protecting their investment. And with Bitcoin, you know, it's something similar where you have a lot of like really, really religious supporters who are kind of the holders, you know, of the last resort, who are just never going to sell. That creates a pretty powerful price for a lot of these things. And then on top of that, you also have like, you know, guaranteed fixed supply, which obviously I think like there are going to be some issues about in the future, but it is a meme that people buy. It is a meme that people believe in. And I think like that in itself is like more powerful.
But people don't write research reports on gold, right? Or fundamentals of gold or how gold is going to get more gold. Right?
Like... Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's like funny, right? Like, we started the research firm like 3 years ago. And since then, like, what can you really research about Bitcoin? Like, we've done obviously a few articles about, you know, a few research like pieces about mining and a few like macro looks basically on how Bitcoin is performing. But ultimately, like, there really isn't much you can research. It's more so about just like enough people believing, and the better the buy-in is and the longer Bitcoin survives, I think the longer, the better the likelihood that it will continue surviving. That's kind of my thesis. But there are a lot of issues, obviously, like it's still not exactly figured out how everything is going to be incentivized when there's not many subsidies anymore. And you know, a lot of people just don't want to answer these things right now because they just put it off. But generally, yeah, there isn't much to research. We don't research much. What we also do from time to time is just like explain what Bitcoin is, explain how it works to just institutional customers that like want to learn just fundamentally what it is. But generally, yeah, if you want to dig a little bit deeper, really like Bitcoin mining is the only thing where you can really look at a lot of data and analyze like how that's going. Everything else, you know, not much, honestly.
Part of this research, right, is to give you some ability to predict price, right? I would imagine, like, why would I care about Bitcoin is because I hope that it doesn't crash or it goes up, right? Or something, right? Like, so where does that come from?
It just comes from people that, and I think this is like somewhat justified, that see like what's going on around us for the last 2 years and see that like inflation is spiking while a lot of people have been denying that this is going to happen. It's just like this belief of finally like having control over something like being programmed before is a powerful concept that like a lot of, you know, hedge fund investors and institutional investors just buy into.
Is that like a fundamental though? Are we going to have like, you know, accounting standards for like how much of a religious belief is spread?
I think like by itself is like somewhat fundamental, right? Like, why are people investing in gold? Like, you can be asking the same questions. You know, central banks have some gold, but ultimately it's just because enough people believe that it will retain value. And it has like done that relatively well historically. And as we are moving, like everything, as you know, is like now moving to the digital world. Like everything that used to be physical is somehow transforming into a digital world. And there's probably no reason why money shouldn't, you know, why that shouldn't happen to money either. And there's, I think, you know, fundamentally, there also is some value to Bitcoin not changing that much. Like a lot of people make fun of it. And I think, you know, it is kind of funny as well. There's not much innovation in Bitcoin, but, you know, also that it's one of the benefits where you have something that's totally predictable. You have something that, you know what to expect from. And, you know, I kind of buy that as well. I think like Bitcoin is one of the most boring things that you can invest in, but it's also like the thing that usually get people in the door. And it's always like when friends come to me and you know, when they say, you know, what they invested in, it's almost always Bitcoin first, just because it's talked about the most. It's kind of like also the most safe, if you think about it. Everything else is kind of, you know, still unclear. Even Ethereum, even Solana, like it's not totally clear if like all this is going to end up working out and if there's ever going to be like some larger issues. Whereas with Bitcoin, it's a little bit more guaranteed that if people keep having this belief and if something is digitally scarce, it will probably retain the value in the future. So yeah, I mean, it is kind of ridiculous, but it, like almost everything is a meme recently. So, you know, why not Bitcoin as well?
Well, I mean, it's weird, right? Like we're not looking at a company, even like Google or Facebook, which has people and memes or Twitter, right? But they still have like cash flow.
Yeah, but it was Bitcoin was the first as well, which in itself like has a lot of value. I mean, for every project, if you look at like everyone who was always the first, even in crypto, there's always a big premium to that. And I don't think it matters too much, like if their cash flows and if they're real people. It just matters if enough people like believe that this will retain the value in the future, and if enough people do. And it, like, you know, I think like Tesla buying like was a massive fundamental shift. Like we saw that, you know, with just like our customers on the research side, it absolutely exploded after an announcement. Like just institutional interest, like more companies inquiring into what Bitcoin is, more companies thinking about treasury management. Like those things really matter, and it's hard to go back from them.
Can you like measure that? Can you measure how many people believe that Bitcoin is safe or like a inflation fund? Like you're literally just testing like what, like the religious, how many people are in part of the religion, basically.
But like, you know, I think you can say something similar to you know, about Ethereum, probably about Solana as well. Like you always need some sort of a belief. Like, of course, there's some backdrop of, you know, some sort of cash flow, some fee generating. But it's the same shit as like people saying, you know, I'm only investing in cash flow generated DeFi projects. But like, ultimately, who cares, right? Like, ultimately, if the price goes down generally over the market, like, it doesn't matter if you have cash flows or not. Like, everything's going to crash. It's just like a general belief in the market overall.
Especially if they're marked in the token itself, right? Then if the price goes down, the cash flows.
Exactly. So a lot of like TVL metrics and all the like revenue metrics, and not only that, but like, you know, we've talked about this before as well, but like a lot of the revenue, or what people call revenue, is basically just going to, you know, the participants, or like LPs, or it's not even distributed in any way. So a lot of this thing, just I think it like doesn't matter too much. What's important is just like social belief. Yeah, it really is. Like, it does sound ridiculous even to people on the outside, but like, when more people are buying into it, you know, it is basically a Ponzi, but it's a really like well-working Ponzi.
You said it. So, I mean, like, what about something like SushiSwap? What is the value there?
Yeah, so I think like SushiSwap is interesting. And I think the value is like your belief that this will continue existing in the future, that the people involved in SushiSwap, the developers, will, you know, figure out ways how to get some value out of the ecosystem. And you know, it does have some, you know, even though I just said it's kind of bullshit, it is, but it does have like some claim to cash flows, like unlike Uniswap at the moment. But yeah, I mean, the value is just like you believing that the currently associated developers and the community will just build something that will end up sticking around. So right now, you know, a lot of people are betting on the fact that they're developing an NFT platform to compete with OpenSea. It's you know, they also have a token launching platform. It's always just going to be bet on the people involved with the protocol and on the community. And I think like that's one theme that I see constantly, time and time and again. Crypto is very much about the community. It's very much about engaging with the community, listening to what they want. And I think what SushiSwap has like kind of shown, even though it was like really ridiculed early on, for some really good reasons as well, is that, you know, it does listen to what people actually want. Because if they listen to what people want, you know, they will get more support. They will get more public support. Price usually is pretty reflective to that. So the value is just like betting on this being around for a longer period of time, adjusting to the market. So if people figure out that AMM is not the right way to go and it's an order book based exchange, they're betting on the fact that they'll be able to pivot to something that is meaningful. And I think that's you know, a relatively reasonable bet. But, you know, SushiSwap is still giving out or was giving out a lot of incentives. So if, you know, what a lot of people don't realize or maybe don't want to realize is that, like, if you kind of look at, like, how much they're giving out in incentives and then how much they're actually generating in, like, real, like, revenue or cash flows or whatever, it's usually negative, even for, like, the more successful protocols, because it's still right now.
Like Bitcoin, even.
Yeah, Bitcoin is, like, slightly different where, like, you're ultimately burning energy to prove something. But yeah, it is similar.
So why couldn't, like, Sushi become the meme for internet money or store of value?
I just think because, like, you know, Bitcoin was the first. It's the most established. It has probably the closest properties to something like gold, which is also a meme that people believe in. I mean, I think it potentially could. It's just unlikely. You know, Ethereum could potentially replace Bitcoin at some point if enough people believe that will happen. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Like, if I was if I was betting someone, and I think I bet Kyle that this is not going to happen by the end of like this year, which is ridiculous. I don't know why he made that bet, but like even in like the next like 3 or 5 years, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I'm a logical person. I'm an engineer. This stuff doesn't make sense right to me, right? So I try to break it down into things. The pieces that I see is that there's a technology to coordinate shared state. Nakamoto, yeah. BFT, whatever. And then there's the people participating in that shared state. And the size of the people is that super connected social network. And the technology is the piece of tech that does it.
I mean, look at equities right now, right? Like, no one fucking cares about the fundamental value. Like, no one's investing based on that. People are investing based on memes, based on what they believe the future will be, right? And so even like something as dumb as Tesla, like no one's looking at the cash flows. Everyone's looking at the potential to become something larger in the future. And I think that that's like the same in crypto. People are looking at Bitcoin as being able to capture a lot of that, you know, inflation hedge. Like if you have someone that's right now, you know, an institutional investor or a big hedge fund, and they're looking for instruments to kind of hedge the inevitable inflation that's coming in the markets as central banks just, you know, kind of went nuts in the last 2 years. What are your options right now? You're probably not buying Ethereum. You're probably not buying Solana. You know, maybe you're buying some gold, but probably you're already overexposed to gold in some way. And also, the upside in gold is probably relatively large, relatively small, right? It's like it hasn't really moved. It's not volatile. The opportunity isn't that great. So if you're looking at from like a really pragmatic approach, and I talk to these people, that I know how they're thinking, and this is how they're thinking. It just works that way. It doesn't matter if there's no logic to it. What matters is like, you know, enough people just buying into this meme and then buying it because they believe that the price in the future will appreciate.
Because the meme will get stronger, so you get more people into that. So if these are like memes, right? These are basically kind of social networks.
How much of the recent price appreciation in Solana do you think is because of like strong memes and because of like strong community buy-in? You know, it's not, I mean, maybe you think differently.
I can be totally honest. I think it's purely people comparing us to Ethereum. And then they're like, well, Ethereum is more and this is
exactly
about as good.
And then if you make this comparison to Bitcoin and gold, it's exactly the same stuff, right? People are like, oh shit, what if this goes up to the gold's market cap? The upside is still like 5 to 10x or whatever it is. It's just like, that's how people think. And I think that's exactly right. Like, you're totally right. It's because people in Solana, or a lot of like investors in Solana, they're like, all of a sudden, what if there is like 5% chance that like Solana takes, you know, Ethereum's users and replaces Ethereum in some way?
They're not doing the fundamental valuation comparison of what is the actual value of this thing to the world? Like, what is the benefit derived from it even?
I mean, again, like we can go back to this, like in almost everything, right? Like what's the benefit of any company? It's, you know, it's to kind of satisfy shareholders and like, you know, people don't really care about cash flows anymore lately.
But sure, but we can like remove the cash flow component, maybe in a fully super connected peer-to-peer system that doesn't make any sense, right? Like maybe there is no cash flow because you don't have like a centralized coordinator that's doing it, right? Like it is purely peer-to-peer. Then like, how do you measure like what is the fundamental value that this thing is providing to the world? Like if this didn't exist, is the world poor? Like, can we even say that?
Yeah, I mean, probably not, but you can, again, like you can say this about everything, right? It's like a lot of things don't need to exist.
I can say that about Tesla. I can say if Tesla didn't exist, the world would be poorer because there would be fewer electric cars at high quality electric cars, right? I can clearly say that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But the utility is always like a small aspect of why people are buying into it. It's more so just like your bet on it, that in the future, this will become more important. And as people are kind of, you know, grasping with like how much inflation is kind of hitting right now, there just isn't many other options. And I think that that's really the main reason.
So, I mean, like I can see price being inflated due to there's so much money in the available, so much capital that is seeking future gains that anything with potential for upside is now overvalued, but maybe not overvalued. Maybe it's just market value. It's just the market value for future gains is so large right now. But I can still kind of look back at like that .com era and look at like, okay, Amazon was overvalued. Microsoft was overvalued because there was a huge crash. But I could still see that if I remove this thing from the world is poor. Is there like, are we there yet with crypto? Like 10 years in?
I think honestly we're getting there. I think like crypto now in the last 2 years kind of showed us that there's potential to do good, which is basically giving people access to something that they didn't have before, and like, you know, tangibly kind of making their life better for one reason or another, and also just giving people access to this like new asset class. I think those are like really powerful concepts by itself. And on top of that, you add like composability of all these like different protocols working together. I think, yeah, I would say like if crypto wasn't here, the world will probably be worse off. And I also think that, you know, the longer crypto is around, the higher the chance that it's not going to go away. And I'm like very sure. I can't imagine a world where in like 3 years we bump into each other on the street and we say, "Holy fuck! Like this crypto thing, I was dumb, right?" And it's not around anymore. I just can't see that, right?
Or we're all infected with the same virus, right?
The concept of crypto like makes a ton of sense to me, and it is definitely empowering people, like even in. You know, even in jurisdictions that normally don't have that much access to the financial system. Like, for example, we have a researcher from Kenya on the team, and we only pay her in stablecoins, I believe, or it might be crypto. You know, we initially like tried to pay her through the regular banking system, and it was like almost not possible. And like, you know, she's just one example, but there's tens of thousands of examples like this where you have people all of a sudden like getting access to something that they couldn't access before. And Even if crypto just helped with that by itself, like I love that. I love like, you know, giving people a more equal access to stuff.
Okay, here I'll throw some theories out and see if they stick. I think NFTs are a clear good to the world because any luxury spending that we move away from like fast cars that burn fuel or penthouses into digital goods is a good for the world, right? Like we all of a sudden created, you know, like let people waste their money on digital things because it costs nothing to create, right? Like that's great.
Sure.
And so that's one theory, right? The other one is if we're like moving into post-capitalist society of totally where everything is plentiful, what would people be doing? They would just be messing around in the digital metaverse. This is all just part of it.
No, I think those are like pretty good theories. I think it is like kind of fascinating how you had this shift from, you know, NFTs basically being like a digital flex, only kind of own, you know, the most luxurious NFTs only owned by, you know, by the elite. Like that's really, really interesting to me. I remember like 2017, I was looking at CryptoKitties and, you know, none of that made sense to me. And I, even with CryptoPunks, like I was probably one of the biggest CryptoPunk skeptics as well, even earlier this year. And the price probably like 100x or 1000x since then, it like makes almost no sense to me fundamentally as well. But you know, it's what it is. Like I think like NFTs are actually quite similar to Bitcoin. It's like, Bitcoin is basically like one of the original NFTs. It's the same thing. You're trying to collect, you know, as many of them as you can. And because you believe it's, you know, something that will have some value, and similar things is happening with NFTs. And maybe it is removing some luxury overspending on like dumb cars and watches and all that. But, you know, who knows? I don't know if this is going to stick, but it seems sticky so far.
My theory is that we're going to see internet money be a perpetual basis trade of a NFT floor market. That's going to be the asset that's backing internet money. It's not going to be Bitcoin. It's not going to be ETH. It's going to be entirely backed by culture. Self-sufficient meme generator.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that we kind of hit it on the head. Like, a lot of this is just literally, yeah, backed by culture, like backed by communities, backed by culture, and that's what matters.
Do you think algorithmic stablecoins can make it?
Oh, no. No. Again, like, I mean, there are going to be people that are going to say I'm super dumb and, like, you know, not look at it from the right perspective. Maybe I am, but I think algorithmic stablecoins are, like, fundamentally broken. Like, you're always relying on some sort of demand to be the backdrop of stabilizing these things, and I'm just not skeptical that that's going to hold up in like really maybe not as favorable market conditions long term. And I have not seen signal evidence to show that like these things will be resistant to some sort of scrutiny in the future. You know, that being said, I mean, it, like stablecoins are probably going to be regulated by the US government, and you know, maybe like if you create enough demand for these, like it can sustain for some time. A lot of like the algorithmic stable coins have performed incredibly well because they're really like, what happens if stable coins are like called securities in the US now? It like severely impacts the rest of the crypto space. When you look at something like DAI, you know, probably it's backed massively by centralized stablecoins as well. And then all of a sudden, like, what's the alternative, right? Like, if none of the centralized stablecoins are allowed to be used by investors in the US, and a lot of that, you know, even on Solana, like a lot of the DeFi apps still use USDC, and on Ethereum as well. I think that's why there's a lot of interest, is because like people are realizing that centralized stablecoins are obviously prone to be regulated. And if they are, it's going to kind of affect how the rest of the space operates. DAI, you know, hasn't shown that it's actually really decentralized, especially now that it's backed, you know, massively by centralized stablecoins. And you don't really have any other options at the moment if you want to just transact value in some sort of a stable instrument. But generally, I think like the idea of an algorithm of stablecoins is never going to work. It's much better to just use Ethereum or, you know, Ethers or Solana or Bitcoin as the unit of value and just limit that if stablecoins are regulated. At least that's my belief.
Do you how much do you guys spend researching regulation, like in the U.S. specifically?
Not much on the research side. Like most of this is just like mostly on the news side. We have people, you know, in Washington that talk to these guys. But I guess the problem with like researching regulation generally, it's that it's super opaque, right? Like you don't see into it unless you talk to people and you actually ask them what they're thinking. You don't really know. So like we have, you know, we know some people who are talking to the SEC, you know, some people that are talking, you know, to CFTC and some regulators, and we have a directional idea of what will happen. But ultimately, like none of us can know until this is actually going to go into the effect. And, you know, we sometimes talk to the lobbying firms as well, and they also don't know. It's a black box completely. But I think like what most people that we talk to that actually are in the know or some sort of insiders, they agree that some sort of regulation is coming. Like the SEC, obviously, I mean, there have been like tons of indications already, but the SEC will do something. The question is how severe this will be. And it is very likely to me right now that within like the next year or year and a half, there will be some sort of a framework for crypto assets from the SEC, so they can actually like with some sort of certainty know if it could be a security or if it's just a utility coin or a governance coin. And there are also some like serious indication that stablecoins are going to be in some way regulated. I've heard like rumors that there are a lot of people who are trying to label it securities, but none of that is final, and I don't think we're gonna find out until, you know, actually that gets released in some way.
Yeah, this is like a lot of big uncertainty. You don't think there's any hope of like US actually just like creating clear, simple rules that just open the space up to innovation? Are you both bearish on regulation and bullish on crypto at the same time?
I think the US is likely going to release some guidelines. The SEC will likely release some like clear guidelines for what is and what isn't a security. I think that's going to be coming. So, I mean, that could be positive in some way. It's probably going to label a lot of the governance coins as securities. Could be negative short term as well. Generally, yeah, I'm pretty bearish on like US regulation. I what I've seen like anecdotally is a lot of people just getting out of there. Like I frankly don't understand why DeFi teams are based in the US, why Uniswap team is based in Brooklyn. It makes no sense to me. I think if you're trying to build a really censorship resistant DeFi protocol, you should get out of the US because there is like too uncertainty for you right now. And also, you know, for people to invest in your protocols, like there's just too much uncertainty. And I think like a lot of the future in crypto will be like anonymous developers developing these protocols. I'm like pretty convinced about that as well, that this eventually will shift into like pseudo anonymous developers that are not doxed. I don't think this will happen to like L1s. So the networks that will like be secure in these protocols. But I do believe that those that are like really trying to empower people without being limited by sometimes like nonsensical regulations, I believe those will have to be built by pseudo-anonymous developers in some way or another, and then just decentralized early. I think that that's going to solve some of the issues. You know, there's obviously some like doubts about like trusting, like people trusting these projects. But I mean, there have already been like some hints at this potentially happening. So I'm pretty positive about, or pretty optimistic that this will happen.
What does decentralization mean in that context for these projects?
For me, it means just like inability to shut something down. So if you're the SEC and you're looking at Uniswap, you know, maybe you can call like the unit token a security, but like ultimately, what are you going to accomplish if you go after the project? You're not going to be able to shut it down. You're probably just going to look like a fool afterwards. And so you don't have that many options. So to me, decentralization means if someone really wants, if a regulator really wants, or if some third party really wants, it's impossible to shut you down. So just like having, you know, unchangeable contracts deployed on Ethereum or on Solana, that's decentralized to me. And I think a lot of that will kind of go towards that direction. I mean, we've seen examples of this with 1inch, for example, in the last 2 weeks. Like 1inch started limiting US customers, or at least letting them sign the message. And that's, you know, partially it is because they're doing a lot of like off-chain computing, and they can be targeted in some way by these regulators. They can be threatened, whereas some other protocols like really can be. And I do also think that in the future, like in the next couple of years, there's going to be a lot of like front ends basically blocking or geo-blocking and you know, restricting users, blocking assets. There's going to be a shift into alternative front ends, for example, or making people interact with the protocols more directly than what they do now, which is they Google Uniswap, go onto Uniswap's website, and then swap an asset. Like, that's not going to be sustainable. I'm already like pretty certain about that.
But like, why? I'm just annoyed that like, if this is pure code, what is there to regulate? The token, right? Yeah. Like the unit token. So like to speak to your original point that you've become a believer of every project needs a token. But like if the contract itself doesn't need a token, right? Doesn't do anything besides run this mathematical function. There's nothing to regulate.
That is true. That's totally true. I think why projects need a token is pretty simple. It's because it builds communities and it builds engagement, and it helps you incentivize some sort of usage that bootstraps these protocols. So like I don't think that if Compound didn't do the initial initial liquidity mining last year, I don't think DeFi would be where it is right now, because it just, you know, and the same goes for like airdrops. It just helps to engage people. It helps to get them invested in some way. And that's why I think they're important. But you're totally right. Like they are opening up a possibility for regulators to go after these tokens and regulate it in some way. Tokens are also opening up opportunities for not only people to invest, but also institutional investors and more capital to be drawn in. You know, a lot of the VC firms right now, they're completely stacked in cash. Like there's billions of dollars, you know, on the sidelines right now waiting to be deployed. They're only investing because they know there's some sort of an exit strategy, which to them is, you know, selling the token at some point in the future to enough people that think, you know, it's going to be more valuable. And I don't think this would happen if there were no tokens. Yeah, I used to believe this myself as well. It's like Uniswap doesn't need a token. Like, it's a perfect protocol. It's totally fine the way it is. But because it does have a token, it just attracted more usage, and it's trending more people to actually use these things. And I think that by itself is like something that probably overweighs the negative consequences, which is more regulatory capture.
Do you think we could separate the devs from the community? Like, could you have like the Shibu token adopt the best developers in the space? They built the distribution, right, and the community, and they're like, we're going to inherit, we're going to, you know, bribe Vitalik to work on some smart contracts for us.
I don't think that can happen or will happen. I mean, we've seen this before as well. It's like a lot of projects raise a lot of money, like, you know, Tezos or EOS, and they haven't been able to do much with it. They haven't been able to accomplish much. And I think a part of it is that just because, like, you know, communities are built by people actually believing in the project in the future. And I just think that like communities rule everything in crypto, and that's kind of how it's I think it's going to stay.
This is like both utopia and dystopia at the same time.
Yeah. I think it's just a pragmatic approach, right? Like you look at like how everything has worked in the last 3 years, and the conclusion is like, you know, like it makes sense for people to interact with these protocols early because you believe that in the future there's going to be some sort of an airdrop, and that there are like loops to this, right? Like if enough people believe that there are going to be airdrops for all the protocols on Ethereum or on Solana, they're going to use these protocols more. So I mean, you know, even if you look at like the number of transactions on Solana, or just general like how many people are using these things and for what reason. Like, a lot of it is just like speculators. A lot of it is literally like complete useless activity and people just hoping that they're going to make money out of this. And that's fine. Like, if you're bootstrapping usage, if you're bootstrapping attention with purely like capitalistic intent, that I think that that totally works. Like, if Compound didn't do the incentives, I don't think we would be here right now talking to each other. I don't think Solana would be worth as much. And it's just a way to like get more of that interest and almost like abuse the speculators to get more attention for this, to get more mainstream media to cover this, to get more investors interested in this. I think it's like much deeper than you think, where, yeah, a lot of these are probably useless to some extent, but it is a social, a lot of these are just social experiments, social tokens, and a way for people to get exposure to some of these things.
If we use that as like the fundamental thing, then you really should be looking at these as social networks. How many people, how connected they are, what are they doing?
Yeah, you should be. And then also utility on top, right? Like, if I can get a stablecoin swap for cheaper than I can get it on a centralized exchange, like, that's probably worth something. Similar for Uniswap, like, if some of these pairs have more liquidity and it's cheaper for me to go there instead of on Binance, if I want to sell like $1 million of something, like, that's also worth something. But generally, yes, it's like absolutely a function of how many people are using these things, how many people are interacting with this. That's why I think, like, for crypto, a lot of like the most powerful indicators are really social indicators. It's like looking at how many people are actually using these things, how many people are actually transacting. What's more difficult sometimes is to like remove all the, like, you know, either fake activity or non-essential activity. And that's the hard part. But generally, yeah, it's just a function of like attention, function of which people are involved. And eventually you hope that this will turn into a mainstream thing. Like, I don't, like, when I look at DeFi right now on Ethereum and even on Solana, like, it's a relatively meaningless number of people using these things. Even Uniswap, it's like, what, you know, maybe 150,000 users maximum. It's a joke, right? Like, it's, if like, none of us think that this is going to be, you know, this is why we're here. Like, all of us think that this will eventually go to, you know, tens of millions of people using these protocols. And that's really the end game. And I think, like, even obviously for Solana, like, one of the premises for why it's designed this way is to support a lot of these new people.
Yeah, I've said this a bunch of times that, like, trying to predict how this stuff is going to be used is like trying to predict Facebook in 94. Yeah. Zero chance I would have believed you that sharing pictures of your cats is going to be worth $1 trillion, I think. Ridiculous.
Yeah. I totally agree. And no one knows. So I think that's like kind of the fun part, right? It's like enabling people to really do whatever they want. It's really cool. Like, even just me talking to some small teams about seed investing, it's like, you know, you're talking to people in Pakistan and India, those guys normally would be, you know, somewhere closed up in the office, like not really having these opportunities. And now all of a sudden, you know, they can develop these protocols. They can arbitrage them. They can make money. Like, we have a guy in Russia, it's a genius, like, genius coder, and he's like exploiting these like arbitrage opportunities, and, you know, making a ton of money. Like, that's awesome, right? Like, that's really powerful.
Awesome, man. Really good to go deep down the rabbit hole with you.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't expect I would be the one convincing you of like crypto's potential. I thought it would be the other way, but
I'm an engineer, so I look at a system and then I try to, like, where does it break down? Why is all this stuff like not seem backed by like, you know, strong arguments and like real physics, you know? Like, why is it all bullshit? All right, man. Really awesome to have you. Thank you for being here. Larry, thank you for being in the Solana podcast, and always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.